Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore, covering Haunted Mansion with special guest Michael Van Bodegem Smith. All right.
Welcome, foolish mortals, to the Haunted Mansion.
Jeff.
I'm your host, your ghost host.
Jeff.
The spirits are starting to hear your sympathetic vibrations.
I want to feed on your souls.
Wow. I just want to let you know, when Stuart was talking, I didn't get any of it.
Oh, shit.
You didn't get the sound effects?
Stuart was using a silly voice effect.
You look really scary.
With a very scary tone that Michael cannot hear on his head.
So,
all right.
Basically, I see some aggressive pointing, and that's all I got.
So,
I'll listen back.
What we've just learned is that if Stuart presses a voice effect button, he can speak without Michael hearing him. So, if he wants to just be like, if Michael says something, and Stuart wants to disagree, he can just press the voice effect.
That's true. Or he could just mute the, the Zoom.
He
audio.
Could just mute. That would be
I
the
could
simpler
just mute
approach,
the Zoom
right?
audio.
But that's not as funny.
That's really weird that you can't
understand the monster voice.
So here's I'll give you what I'm hearing. It's like, that's really where the pretty much what it sounds like.
So you can't even understand what I'm saying.
It's just like a grumble. It's like a low grumble.
Wow. That's so weird. I don't know why it does that.
Well, that is very strange.
Yeah.
As
we said, I am your host, your ghost host, on Travolting Presents Easy Riders. I'm here today talking about the 2023 motion picture, Haunted Mansion.
Not to be confused with the 2003, The Haunted Mansion.
Yes, very,
with Eddie Murphy.
Very clear delineation between them. One has a the other does not.
It's exactly. They knew this in advance.
And we are welcoming back to the show a dear friend and longtime composer, Michael Van Bodegem Smith.
Ghost host. How long did you work on that ghost host bit?
Michael, could you say that again? Stuart was playing some loud noises.
Oh my goodness. I was using, how long was that ghost host voice? How long did it take you to find that? Because that was really nice.
When I was a kid, went to Disney a lot, rode the Haunted Mansion a multitude of times, which we'll talk about on the show. But I am well versed in the ghost host voice.
Okay. Perfect. You're so qualified for this.
I'm overqualified for this episode. An episode which I'm going to be very frustrated with the movie.
Great.
Because I find this movie deeply frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
Michael, had you seen this movie before?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we got the, for my anniversary with Jimena last year, my girlfriend, I bought her like the Disneyland annual pass or whatever, like the Magic Key, that's what it's called. And we'd always go ride on the Haunted Mansion ride, right? And I've never seen it, the original or the and she's like, but the new one just came out. So we watched it, and I guess I don't know what I was expecting, but I guess so. I didn't really, I was just like, sure, that was fine. They kind of did the thing where they rode in the chairs and they did the ride, and I was like, hey, I did that. I rewatched it last night in preparation, and I think I liked it better the first time.
I will actually agree with your point. I've seen this movie twice. I saw it in theaters, and then I watched it last night in preparation for this episode. And I very much, I liked it. But the first time, I was still frustrated by it, but I enjoyed the experience of watching it. This time, my frustration became more palpable with this movie. Stuart, you had not seen this before.
I had not seen this before. This is my first time watching. And I'm surprised you saw this in theaters.
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't see it in theaters.
Of course I saw this in theaters. Have you met me?
Yeah, you watch everything.
You tell me there's a movie called Haunted Mansion. Of course I'm going to the theater to go see it.
Jeff, if you heard there was a title called The Human Centipede Returns for the Fourth Time, you would watch that.
I've had a free weekend, I'd go.
Yeah, exactly. No title would say, I don't think I need to watch that.
But a movie called Haunted Mansion, of course I'm going to go see that. Especially based on one of the great rides.
Yeah.
The the Disney saga of
making their
theme
rides.
Park adaptations.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Very interested in that.
I would very much like movies based on Disney.
Because what's Space Mountain supposed to be?
So they're trying to make a Space Mountain movie.
Oh, I shouldn't have said anything.
So there's a very limited list of movies based on Disney theme park rides. I think it would be a fascinating like podcast one day to just go through this list.
Yeah.
Because it's Tower of Terror.
Yeah.
Which is a Disney Channel original from 97. Uh-huh. Brian De Palma's Mission to Mars in 2000.
Whoa.
The Country Bears.
Yeah.
Pirates of the Caribbean, The Curse of the Black Pearl.
Okay.
The Haunted Mansion with Eddie Murphy. Three more Pirates of the Caribbean movies. Brad Bird's Tomorrowland. another Pirates of the Caribbean. And then Jungle Cruise with The Rock. And then this movie.
Jungle Cruise.
That's such an insane lineup. That is such a weird run of movies.
Yeah, yeah. And then Pirates being like their billion-dollar moneymaker.
The Pirates of the Caribbean is the only one that's like a big success.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think I've heard of the other ones except for the Jungle Cruise.
Yeah, Jungle Cruise, a movie I haven't seen, a movie that I should probably see. Should probably have watched before this episode so I could have deep-seated takes on all of these Disney
theme park ride adaptations. Yeah, I will just say I watched the Eddie Murphy one, and I'm actually kind of a defender of that movie.
I watched that movie when I was a kid, and I remember not liking it that much, but I have not seen it since.
But maybe I had bad taste in movies as a kid, and if I rewatched it...
You have bad taste in movies now, am I right?
I control the soundboard, bitch.
You do. It's true. Yeah.
I wish I could have heard that. That was funny.
Can't hear any of it.
You have to stop.
Man.
But no, it's such a weird trend. Like, Disney's the only company that can really do this, right? I mean, it's, mm-hmm. like, there's not really another... Like, Universal has a theme park, but those are basically all based on movies.
Yeah, they're the other end of the spectrum, where they make rides based off of movies that were successful.
Which Disney does now for the most part. But, like, when Disney opened, it didn't have that much in the way of, like, movie tie-in.
Right. Can't really make Bambi the ride.
Yeah, because like there was a Mr. Toad ride. There's a Snow White ride.
Shoot that deer.
There's Peter Pan's flight. All those things in Disneyland.
Right. Yeah.
But like it was a big thing that like they thought Disneyland was gonna flop, and that's why Tinkerbell and Jiminy Cricket are the icons.
You just gave me an idea for like a body horror movie similar to Tusk. Where it's like you go to Disney World and they have like what's the Pleasure Island? Yeah, where they turn the kids into donkeys, but it's like really grotesque, gory body horror shit where they actually like turn kids into donkeys.
You need to watch the movie Escape from Tomorrow, a movie I've never seen, but I think it's probably what you're looking for.
Escape from Tomorrow?
Anyway.
All right.
When Disneyland opened, like Jiminy Cricket and Tinkerbell were the icons for it because they're like, well, they're tangential characters. So if Disneyland flops, it doesn't bring down Mickey Mouse. And of course, it was a huge success, and Mickey Mouse appeared, and you know, and the rest is history. But the rides that they opened with were like kind of just generic like theme park rides, with like incredible theming to them. It was Pirates of the Caribbean, Jungle Cruise. I mean, some of these rides come later down the pike. But the original conception was like, you know, Jungle Cruise, Space Mountain, Pirates of the Caribbean, Haunted Mansion, Big Thunder Mountain. Just these archetypal rides that weren't based on like a piece of IP or anything. It was like, this is the Western ride. This is the spooky ride, the pirate ride.
Right. Actually, you know what? I've never thought about them so generically because now we go. I've never been to Disneyland before like last year, right?
Yeah.
But I went, and now since they're so iconic and well-known, I'm like, oh, man. That's the Space Mountain.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's really actually, when you think about it, it's Western, future, space. It's just super, like, the most generic stuff they could.
When they opened Disneyland, it was like, there's four sections. There's Adventureland, Frontierland, Fantasyland, and Tomorrowland. And there's sci-fi, fantasy, Wild West, adventure.
Yeah.
Which is just kind of generic jungle.
Right.
And it was much more of just, you know, playing to things that were interesting at the time than based on, like, specifically IP. There wasn't, like, Star Wars Land.
Yeah.
Or Dumbo Land. There was the Dumbo Ride, but that's just, like, a spinning thing.
Yeah.
I get dizzy just thinking about the Dumbo Ride.
It's not like, you know, Rise of the Resistance, where you're on a like remote controlled vehicle being shuttled around with stormtroopers shooting at you, and Kylo Ren attacks you, and Adam Driver screaming at you. It was much more generic at the time.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, no good deed can go unpunished. And so 50 years later, Disney's looking for IP to mine. Like, what do we own that we can franchise? And they're like, the theme park rides. Let's multi-layer market them. Because right now, everyone loves Pirates of the Caribbean. Let's turn it into a movie franchise. And I will say, the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, mostly a success. They eventually peter out. But the first three, like, big success for Disney.
Yeah.
And they're like, what else can we do this with? The Eddie Murphy Haunted Mansion, like, kind of works. It makes, like, a decent little profit, but not enough for them to want to, you know, franchise it anymore. And after that, they kind of, like, let this rest for a bit. Brad Bird makes Tomorrowland because he wants to make Tomorrowland in 2015. Mm-hmm. And then with, like, the reign of Bob Iger coming near its end, you know, around 2019, 2018, he's like, I would like to go back to this idea. What else do we have that we can mine that's not making as much possible money as it can for us right now? And they're like, Jungle Cruise, Haunted Mansion, Space Mountain. What movies can we make up based on those? How can we, you know, expand their reach? It's kind of this, like, annoying corporate ideology.
And we do live action remakes with CGI of Jungle Book and Lion King.
Yeah. Mufasa, the Lion King.
Mufasa.
Mufasa.
With songs by Lin-Manuel Miranda. and so and so they put all these movies into development. Jungle Cruise comes out first, and doesn't really, you know, is not like a huge success from what I remember. Like I said, I haven't seen it. I know it has Jesse Plemons in it, so I should probably see it. But that Haunted Mansion, I was kind of interested by how they were going along with this.
Mm-hmm.
Because they hired Justin Simien, who's like a real, you know, up-and-comer director.
Yeah.
He directs Dear White People, which puts him on the map. And then he showruns the TV show version of Dear White People. And then he's just kind of like bouncing around for a bit. He puts out another movie called Bad Hair, but it's like he's constantly getting attached to movies and, you know, they're not really coming together.
Mm-hmm.
He's announced that he's making a Lando TV show for Disney Plus in 2020. Mm. With Donald Glover coming back as Lando from the Solo movie.
Okay.
And then people just don't hear about it. And people are like, what happened to Lando? And then suddenly it's announced that there's a new Haunted Mansion movie and he's directing it and writing it.
Yeah.
And it basically seems like Lando just wasn't really coming together. And so he just pivoted and Disney had this that they wanted to make. And so he hops on it. It has a screenplay by Katie Diffold, which Justin Simien jumps on top of and kind of, you know, he workshops a little bit. He doesn't get credited, but he has involvement in, you know, the story of this movie.
Yeah.
Something else of note is that Disney wanted Guillermo del Toro to make this movie for so long.
Mm.
He was like attached to a new Haunted Mansion from like 2010. And it was something that he wanted to do in that era.
Yeah.
It was less Disney, you know, looking for this IP and more just Guillermo del Toro saying, I would like to make a Haunted Mansion movie. That has been my favorite thing for a long time. Ryan Gosling is attached to star with Guillermo del Toro. But Guillermo del Toro has like 15 projects lined up. And he's one of those guys who has like 20 things in the, like, that he's talking about making, and then he makes one that he didn't talk about.
That's so true.
And so he just keeps, you know, saying, I'll get to make it eventually. I'll get around to it. And Disney decides they want to stop waiting. And so they can the Guillermo del Toro version, go with this Katie Dippold, Justin Simien one. And Simien kind of, you know, he was interested in doing something higher scale, which is why I think this movie is drawn to him. But he's, you know, a director with, he's like a real director. He has ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch this movie and I'm curious, like, how much of this is really him? Like,
yeah.
Not that I think Disney took this away from him at all. I don't think that happened. I do think he directed this movie. But like, this feels like something that kind of got away from him a bit.
Yeah.
Like, there were expectations placed upon this movie that weren't in his, like,
wheelhouse.
Yeah, in his wheelhouse.
Well, there was a moment where, like, I'm trying to think of the specific scene where it's like, oh, careful, guys.
Yeah.
You might mistake yourselves into making a real movie. And that's when, like, the main character, Ben, played by, how do I say, Lakeith Stanfield?
Mm-hmm.
Where he, like, gives this, like, really, like, emotional scene about losing his wife that does not belong in this movie at all. And it's like a moment where I'm like, wait a minute. Like, what's this doing in here? What's this pocket of pearls doing in this, like, you know, CGI fest of a theme park ride movie? It's like it was like a quick little moment where I'm like, wait, okay, wait a second. Like, we have a genuine heartfelt moment in this movie here. Yeah. What's going on?
That's ultimately why I find this movie very frustrating.
Is it doesn't know what lane to pick?
No, I think this movie is one rear end away from being good, if not great.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, I think this movie, like, what this movie wants to be is it wants to be Clue in a haunted house. That's what this movie wants to be.
Okay.
It's the pitch, like, I'm going to pitch this movie to you
mm-hmm.
with the same plot, roughly, in a way that sounds good.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
Here we go.
A family inherits a haunted house.
Go.
A family inherits a haunted house, and they move, or they inherit a mansion, and they move in and discover that they believe their house is haunted. In order to verify this, they recruit a priest, a scientist, a historian, and a medium to come essentially prove that their house is haunted. The four of them come to the house, use their various tools. They all get trapped in the house by a nefarious spirit. And they have to exorcise this spirit in order to escape the house. Mm-hmm. And they have to figure out where in the house they have to find the thing to exercise the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
This movie should be 90 minutes long. And that should be the plot. This movie gets so in deep with this fucking lore.
Yeah.
And it's like, we have to go to Crump Manor. And I'm like, I don't care about Crump Manor. Stop with this.
Yeah.
Like, this should be like basically a wacky comedy with some spooks.
Yeah.
Some scary mm-hmm. moments. Have you seen Clue, the movie?
Not in a long time.
Yeah.
Based on like the board game.
Yeah.
Which sounds like a terrible idea, but it's actually a very fun movie.
Yeah.
That should be the plot. It should be like these wacky caricatures with these same actors, because I think they're all actually very good casting for their roles.
Agreed.
Yeah.
And they should just be inside the house. The movie should be about how they think that these ghosts are all trying to haunt, like trying to harm them. Because when you ride, you know, Haunted Mansion in Disneyland or World, the story of that ride is you are being ushered through a haunted house. And the first half of the ride is very scary. You essentially are seeing like lightning flashes and you're seeing visuals and you don't know where the ghosts are. You think that they're trying to harm you. It's like when I was a kid, I was very scared of this ride. It's very effective. And then the twist halfway through the ride is, no, the ghosts are all happy ghosts. They want to have a party and you're invited.
Mm.
And the second half is you attend their party in the graveyard. And that's where they play a Cripple's Creek in the Tombstone Square dirt, 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 song. The movie should follow that same structure.
Yeah.
It should be that these people think they're being haunted. They're all terrified. They're scared. They're trapped in the house. And at the end, they learn the ghosts like are all cool, except for there's the one who they have to get rid of.
Yeah.
See, the movie has that structure.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But it's 2 hours long.
Yeah.
Gets deep in the lore.
Uh-huh.
And never figures out like a tonal lane to be in.
Yeah.
To accomplish this goal.
Yeah.
Because there's like Clue is like the great example because that follows like that movie's kind of like it's very funny, but it's also occasionally like weird and creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the lane you want to be threading.
Yeah.
In this movie.
Yeah.
Does this make sense?
It does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Michael, when you watch this movie, like what do you feel this movie is trying to do?
Well, I think... Well, let me just start with my favorite part of the movie. After they come back from Crump Manor, and they get the jalapeno poppers from Burger King.
Yes.
And it's 5 seconds in the car of the Burger King logo on my face.
Yes.
That was... Yeah. Amazing. It's trying to sell me. No, I mean... That actually, in seriousness, that part, like, literally no point for that at all, right? Except for just, like, making money for them. But there were a few times in the movie where, like, I think what Stuart was saying, where I'm like, wait, hold on, this is onto something really interesting. And then, but it just seems like they're trying to fit a lot in, like the whole, like, you're my dad because my dad's dead, but you could be him kind of thing. Like, it was kind of sweet, but it felt kind of forced to me personally. There would be like 2 minutes randomly throughout where they're like, oh, you know what would be good here? Let's like do like a father son thing. And at the end, we're going to wrap it all together. But it never, like, I guess it never felt natural to me. And like, again, to your point, Jeff, I would rather they have focused on that more simple narrative instead of stuffing a lot of details that, you know, maybe are fan servicing. I don't know. It's not that I didn't appreciate all the details or the lore, but I'm just like, it's too long. It's kind of wearing me down a little bit.
That's how I feel about this podcast.
When they get to the end of the movie and it's like a battle in the graveyard.
Yeah.
I am so checked out.
Yeah, I'm very checked out at that point.
I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care.
It didn't help that battle was the cheesiest it could possibly be. I mean, not even the CGI. I'm just the lines were, it was like a Marvel movie taken out of context.
Yeah. Say it again. And then they're like, I knew you couldn't hear the sound effect on that, Michael, but I was like, return.
When they like, The climax of this movie should not be a battle. What are we fucking doing here, guys?
Well, next week we're going to talk about Beetlejuice 2 and something that we'll talk about. But like it that's the movie where the ending, it like makes the joke that it's going to be tied up as like a bow, and then it reveals that it doesn't. And this is the joke. This is like Haunted Mansion is the butt of that joke.
Yeah.
Because like that's the one when he's in the doorway and Rosario Dawson, who like gives them that line, it's like, you know, if you take a step through the store, a callback to a scene that happened earlier, but in different contexts, because she's like, if you take one step in the store, you're not going to be allowed to leave. Like your life will change forever. Then at the end of the movie, it's like, if you take a step through this door, you know, your life's going to change. And it's like, grow up. Like, I don't care about this whatsoever in this movie. Like, none of this matters to me. Like, What are we putting
and
our
like,
time and energy in?
You can
in?
Still have like the stuff where they're like, you know, finding hidden rooms in the house and whatnot. That's like fun. That's a fun idea to play on.
Yeah.
But I don't need all this shit about like you have to get X to accomplish Y.
Be my dad.
You can just like they discover the summoning room and Madame Leota's in the crystal ball in the summoning room. And like she tells them, oh, the hatbox ghost is, you know, a foreign spirit that is controlling.
That had the makings to be a good scene.
And that's why. Yeah. And that's the ghost you're being scared by. And here's how you can see the spirits.
And that's where I checked out.
And like,
it's like they add an extra step onto everything.
Yes.
Exactly. And like the whole attic thing.
The whole
gone without that.
Yeah. It's like, oh, but he's not just a headless corpse carrying his head in a box. He also worked at this different manor and got his head chopped off. I said, like, don't care. Like, you had me at headless corpse, nefarious spirit type. Like, it's so. Oh, you're playing something.
Boy,
I think Jeff's trying to play a clip.
No, I'm just. No, I was just looking. Keep going.
Well, anyway, just to what I was saying. I couldn't decide what lane this movie was trying to pick, and both in the story wise and like emotional sense, like. And the other problem with it too, Michael, you tell me how you felt about this. Like, I don't have a private movie theater in my apartment.
Really?
And I watched this during.
I thought that's what I'm looking at right now.
Oh, well, I appreciate that. But I watched this during the day on my living room TV. I couldn't see jack shit in this movie.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you a quick thing that happened. So I was watching this on my girlfriend's sister's Disney Plus, right? And I'm watching it, and all of a sudden, like, the Disney Plus app bugs out, and I can't finish the last, like, 20 minutes of the movie on Disney Plus. So I have to rent it on Amazon Prime for, like, $4 just to watch the last 15 minutes of it.
Oh, no, not the worst part.
That's the worst, right. So I watch it, and I think, okay, maybe it was, like, a Disney Plus app settings that, like, made this really bad. Because we have the TV where you can put it on filmmaker mode.
Yes.
Yeah.
But then...
The Rian Johnson mode.
Shake your hand. But then we started watching on Amazon Prime, And it was just as dark. Yeah.
No, that is just the look of the movie.
And I couldn't see jack shit.
I have a comically nice TV, not to humble brag. But this movie still looks so... There's like a daylight exterior scene in the middle of New Orleans. And I'm like, I can't see shit, Captain. Yep.
Yeah, and it was so distracting for me that I kept checking out very quickly. I couldn't understand what was going on. I didn't understand who the characters were. Like, I literally can't see your movie. Like, I can't see it.
Yeah,
it's so dark. And so I don't know, like, if that was just an intentional thing to, like, make it as fucking dim as possible so we can't see it that well unless you're in a blacked out room with a big fucking bright screen. Like, I don't know. I just, but this was, but then this came out in 2023. So during like the streaming age. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, you knew this was coming out on TV, guys. Like, what's your deal with this?
I think in some way we've just forgotten how to light movies.
Yeah.
I was gonna say, this is not a new thing, right? This has been ongoing.
Because the big problem a lot of things have nowadays is that, like, I would say there are two major issues.
Mm-hmm.
Either a movie is like really flat, like I'm going to use Captain America: Civil War as an example, because that's like gray the movie. Like, I think that movie is like enjoyable, but like the big fight scene happens in a gray parking lot.
Yeah.
In Atlanta.
Yeah.
And like everything around it is gray.
Yeah.
They like put a gray filter in front of everything.
Yeah.
And the inherently the reason why a lot of movies do that is because, like, a lot of big budget movies is because they are playing the cynical game that they understand people will watch these movies in so many different formats. They might see it in the theater, they might watch it on TV at home, they could watch it on their cell phone on a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just composing their shots and lighting everything with that knowledge in mind. Mm-hmm. To make it as like generic of an image as possible, so that no matter how you watch it, you can see the image.
Yeah.
Which, you know, has a simple merit of like, yeah, sure, if you're on your phone, it makes it easier.
The way Christopher Nolan intended, yeah.
But it's, you know, it's crippling the art of shooting a movie.
Mm-hmm.
The other alternative you're seeing a lot of people, like, it's too dim.
Mm-hmm.
And I partially think that that's, like, there was this big, like, David Fincher was, like, a big proponent in the 2010s of, like, you know, shooting your movies with natural lighting.
Mm-hmm.
Or like making them feel more naturalistic and letting things be dark.
Mm-hmm.
He's an artist. Like, he's a real one. He understands like how to make that look artistic.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people are like, we're going for a naturalistic lighting style. So when it's dark, it's dark. And then you just can't see anything.
Yeah.
You watch a movie from like the 70s or the 80s, a nighttime scene. Everything is exposed correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, part of that is that they were shooting on film and you have to expose things correctly for film or you just won't be able to fucking see it.
I was going to say, like, I think the digitalization of it all really matters.
Because then you can crank it up in post and some people leave it to post to crank that up.
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
But then you just get an image like this where it's night and you can't see a damn thing.
And the entire fucking movie takes place at night.
Yeah,
exactly.
And it's like, yeah, I understand. You know what? You can just like have light come in.
Yeah.
People will believe it.
Right.
You can, like, people are like, well, moonlight isn't, like, you know, that real. And I'm like, I don't care. Blast a big old thing of blue at them and say it's moonlight.
Yeah.
You know what? People are trained to believe that.
Exactly.
When you watch a moon, you see a big blue light hitting someone and they're outside at night.
Well, like, to your
point. In real life, you'd be like, that's weird. But you're watching a moon, you're like, I understand that as moonlight.
Well, it's like, to your point about David Fincher, like, I was just watching Mindhunter, which has a lot of scenes in dimly lit places.
But you can always see everything.
You can always see everything. Same with Zodiac. Same with all of Fincher's movies that take place at night. Like, they look naturalistic, but you can see what's happening.
Yes.
This is like they shot it regularly, and then the very last thing they did in post is they took the exposure dial and like dot, 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 and like dialed it all down because I literally could not see anything. I'm curious if like, is there any like press about this, about the, because I feel like this was something that people would have talked about as it was coming out. Like if there was a thing about the, lighting, but I don't know.
I type Haunted Mansion dark lighting and it's just a bunch of people being like, are the lights down on the ride today? so not helping out.
Like, yeah, it's all about the rides.
Yeah.
Nothing about the movie.
But I like, it's frustrating because, like, there are some shots in this movie where, like, oh, they have, like, there's visual ideas here.
Yeah. And the CGI doesn't look...
It's not terrible.
It's not terrible.
But, like, when they're... The house has great production design to it.
Yeah.
Like, they did a really nice job building this haunted mansion.
Mm-hmm.
When they're walking down, like, there's that sequence where Lakeith is walking down the hallway,
yeah,
and the camera's like going behind the pillars, and each time the painting is changed behind him,
mm-hmm.
which is good.
It's great.
There's like clearly a visual idea there.
Yeah,
Justin Simien, you know, is a director.
Yeah,
but like, it's so dim. I'm like, I can't fucking see. Is that like what?
Is that a fisherman?
Yeah.
Is that a sea captain? I can't see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a real shame because that's the kind of a worse like technical mistake that like. Is, I mean, it's not just one person's fault,
yeah,
but it's not that many people's fault.
The funniest thing, if we want to talk about this, is Alien versus Predator Requiem. The second Alien versus Predator movie.
About this.
So, Michael, you might not know about this, but Alien versus Predator 2, they exposed the monitors on set incorrectly. It was like very early digital film, I believe. And they exposed the monitors incorrectly. So every single shot in the movie is substantially darker than it was supposed to be because they were basing off of incorrect monitors.
Oh, man.
And so you watch that movie, and when I tell you, you truly cannot see anything. Like, it is like...
The opening scene is the funniest shit because it's, like, so dark, and you can only see, like, silhouettes of shapes.
You can... Literally. Yeah, it's literally, wow. Like, watching... It's like, it's almost artistic. You're just watching abstract geometry moving about the screen.
Like, literally. It's wow. So bad.
Like, you... Like, I would highly recommend watching a scene from that movie just because of how funny it is, how dim the... Like, I watched that at night.
Yeah.
In a dark room on an OLED screen. And I'm like, what? Wow. Is that the alien or is that the Predator?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what they wanted.
There is a guy who somehow got the source files for that movie and he is recolor correcting the entire movie.
Oh, that's great.
That's a real one right there. But
yeah, I mean, you know, this is kind of interesting that you guys are talking about this because it was like a similar comparison, I think, with music in the music industry where kind of going back to Civil War. Like how it's all gray because they want you to be able to watch it anywhere. We kind of have that with music where like people have taken dynamics out of it.
Yeah.
Like it's just loud all the time and it's never not loud. Like a lot, I'm not saying everything, but a lot more, most of modern music, because you might be on your AirPods, you might be playing off your phone on the airplane, probably not in a treated room with speakers, you know, it's just, we've kind of lost dynamics versus like when music was being played only live 200 years ago, you're sitting in the, you know, quote unquote movie theater, the venue.
Yeah.
So they can do whatever they want. You're going to hear it quiet, loud. And we've just kind of lost that because I think we forgot how to, maybe we didn't forget, but they're like, we can't sacrifice the potential angry customer not hearing this on their plane with their AirPods with the baby screaming. So it just all has to be loud. Some people. Oh, sorry, Stuart, go ahead.
No, keep going.
Yeah, I'm almost done my rant, don't worry. But, you know, some people have tried to combat that by kind of maybe going a little extreme and doing, like, really quiet dynamics and then really loud. And then it's kind of the same thing where, like, if it's too quiet, then the lighting is too dim. You just don't hear it. You just lose all the details. And I get the artistry of it, but I'm like, oh, man, now we have the opposite problem.
Yeah.
And it's like, I guess with the digital age, the point is, like, in every medium, we're still trying to like
figure this out,
even though it's been like a decade now of having it. But I guess it moves so fast, like technology moves so fast, we're still always catching up.
Yeah,
some of us.
I had a professor in my undergrad in audio engineering school that he said like it's the loudness wars is like what the coin term has been called because it's always like with. Comes to like post-production, it really turns into like it has, especially in the digital age with more different post-production elements, like now that you're not doing things on tape, you're doing everything in a box, all these like really expensive compression tools or limiting tools are now all digital now, so you can like push them to the extremes, and all that's really done is it's really faltered dynamic range. If you play, like, obviously there's a lot of context in this little experiment, but we had a guest speaker come to our school and he had this whole like little system set up where he basically wanted to like kind of show us the difference without changing the gain or volume or anything, from like a song that was tracked and recorded and mixed mastered in the 70s versus like the Black Eyed Peas. And you play them side by side and it's like the 70s song, like at a regular volume, is like pleasant, nice to listen to, and it's got its quiet moments, it's got its loud moments, versus you play like the new like pop songs and it's all loud. It is, there's no in between, there's no mix. And it's also starting to happen in movies, and more particular with dialogue, music editing. How many times have you been watching a movie with commercials, like on Hulu or anything like that, and the fucking commercial audio just blows out your speakers, and you're like, what the fuck?
All the time.
All the time. Well, that's because like you see it more so in the commercial realm. It's like the similarness thing with the loudness wars, that it's like louder commercials equal better, because we don't want people to have to like turn up, because no one is going to turn up your commercial. Like, the movie's taking a break, we're at a commercial break, let me turn the volume up to hear this commercial. No one's ever going to do that. So you want your commercial to be like generally mixed and mastered louder than what the source volume would be, which is your movie. So you have to turn it down. Or like what most people do is they walk away from the couch and then you can hear the fucking like whatever commercial is playing in your living room. It's terrible. And I really wish there should be some like kind of regulation to that.
It feels like, you know, there are so many ways to experience media nowadays.
Bring us all back to Haunted Mansion, Jeff.
I'm going to bring us all back to Haunted Mansion.
I was going to say, I can smell a good transition.
There's so many ways to experience media nowadays. Your TV, in a theater, on your phone.
Commercials, no
and
commercials.
I think we are getting too in the weeds about presentation formats and like catering to all of them.
Yeah.
Instead of just making art the way you want to make it.
Yeah.
And then telling people how it should be viewed. I don't think it should be on the filmmaker to make a movie that is easily watchable on a phone.
There's a fine line.
If you would like,
that.
Like within, within reason.
Yeah, within reason.
Like, but I think like if Christopher Nolan, he shot Oppenheimer and he shot that to be watched on an IMAX screen. That is the way he intended to make the movie. This is the way he shot it. He edited it in IMAX format. You can watch it in any other way. And I think it probably still plays on a phone if you wanted to.
Yeah.
I think it's probably fine. It's not as ideal, but it's probably fine. The sound mix will work fine. But that is how I think you should be approaching this stuff. Make it for the format you want it to be seen in.
Yeah.
And if you commit yourself fully to that, I think it'll play fine on other things too. Instead of trying to do this one size fits all approach.
Yeah.
That ends up satisfying nobody.
Yeah, it degrades the whole thing.
Because I make a movie, you know, Captain America Civil War, that looks great on, that looks, you know, I can see everything on my phone. But then you go and you watch in the theater and you're like,
it's all bland.
Yeah, it's bland. I don't come to the theater for bland.
Yeah.
I think, yes.
No, finish your thought.
And I think that Haunted Mansion is a great example of this. Where it's just like, you know, this is trying to cater to so many, I think, different masters, that the good movie at the center here is lost in the sauce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. Michael, you brought up the product placement with the Burger King jalapeno poppers. What I was trying to find was a clip of all the product placement in this movie. There is the amount of times in this movie that they will just say the name of a brand is absurd. When he's talking about how his wife is dead, he's like, yeah, you know, we were getting ice cream at Baskin Robbins.
Yeah. And I'm like, what? Right. That did take me out of it.
Here are my jalapeno poppers from Burger King. I got this house on Zillow for a great price.
Yep.
Yeah.
Or it's Amazon, the Amazon subscription.
I'm going to light a vanilla Yankee candle in here and it's going to change the whole thing. Is this a vanilla Yankee candle? Yeah, I forgot to cancel the subscription on Amazon.
Classic.
Like, what are we doing?
I fucking hate
what
this.
Are we doing?
I hated that.
I think it is fine, like, if you mention a brand in your movie and it feels natural. With product placement in mind, but, like, there are natural ways where, like, if the only product placement line in the entire movie was the Amazon thing, I feel like that would probably
or
be
the
fine.
The Zillow thing. Like, the Zillow thing kind of felt natural. I'm like, well, it makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, if you like, I am against product placement in movies unless it's really funny, and then I'm okay with it. Like the Budweiser truck in Transformers 4, that Mark Wahlberg crashes into, gets out, picks up a Bud. pops the cap open, takes a swig of it, and then says, "You got alien insurance?" Some guy. See, that's good. We should do more of that. But like, if you're gonna do it, or if you're just gonna mention like a brand in your movie, like, or just being like, "Yeah, I got a great deal on Zillow for this house," and then you never mention another brand in the movie for the rest of it, mm-hmm. I wouldn't think about that being product placement,
mm-hmm.
because it's so consistent and it's so obvious and so awkward in the dialogue.
Yeah.
Every time they mention something, like, "Are we done with this yet? My God."
Yeah.
Yeah.
I half expected the Hatbox Ghost to come out and be like, "Buy my hats on this website. I got the hat."
Oh, my God.
"From the vintage store."
Yeah.
The worst part is that wouldn't even have been that out of pocket for the movie.
Yeah.
I'd be like, "Oh, makes sense."
It would not. It would have been so crazy.
Like, I mean, kind of going back to what you were saying earlier, Jeff, about the phone. And I have a confession, since I've seen this before, that I watched the first like hour of the movie on my phone doing mm-hmm. the dishes last night. And
could you see anything?
No. But I could see it just fine, actually, like on my TV. I don't know, maybe like, well, not just fine, but compared to I think what you guys were saying, it didn't take me out of it as much. Or maybe I didn't want to see. But my point is, like, I'll give you an example. Like, you know the scene like that mimics the ride where they're in that long extending room,
yeah,
vertically,
yeah,
and then the alligators or crocodiles are there.
Mm-hmm.
I felt so artificial, the dialogue. Like, I mean, mix wise, like, for yeah. one, so Chris Bauer, since no one else in your podcast will talk about this, like the score, Chris Bowers, I thought the first 20 minutes of the movie, the score was super prominent and super nice, and then the last like 70 minutes or 80 minutes, I couldn't hear it. It was so far in the background.
Yeah.
And I guess my point is, like, in that specific scene, you should be feeling like anxiety and adrenaline, which the music could help with and the sound effects could help with, but the voice, and also, like, not to mention the camera's like here.
Yeah.
You're seeing him way up there, and then the kid just super loud, super dry, no room to the sound, because you could tell it's ADR. It's just like, "Oh no, that's such a far way down. I might get eaten. Look how sharp his teeth are." And I'm like,
and the painting's like, "Climb up into the ceiling."
But the sound mix was terrible. Like, yeah. it sounded like it was mixed for the phone, because the voices was super dry, super upfront, mixed way above like the music, way above the sound effects. There was no room in the sound. Like, it should sound like he's 20 feet above me.
Yeah.
Or like screaming, and he's just there like sort of raising his voice like, "Oh no, would be a shame if I fell down." And I'm like, if that was in a movie theater, that would sound terrible. I assume they did that to tailor to the people watching on their iPads, you know. That frustrated me more than the Burger King thing. I'm like, this is taking me out of it so much. He's like, whatever.
This movie is like trying to appeal to so many masters, mm-hmm. and none of them work is the big problem here. And like, Michael, what you were saying about the music, and like, this will kind of lead us into the beginning of the movie, is that like, when this movie starts off, we're in New Orleans,
mm-hmm.
and you know, we got this kind of jazzy score going, you know, New Orleans jazz band, and I'm like, oh, this is like a fun, you know, kind of propulsive sound we can have to this movie, because the Haunted Mansion in Disneyland is in New Orleans Square. Mm-hmm. That's the section of the park that it's in.
Okay.
In Florida, it's in Liberty Square, which comes, well, I'll bring up later in the episode.
Yeah.
But it's in New Orleans Square, along with like the Pirates of the Caribbean ride.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you're like, I like the idea of like, oh, we're going to have this kind of jazzy New Orleans sound to this movie.
Yeah.
That we can bring in. And then the second they get to the Haunted Mansion, they stop.
Yeah.
I feel that way about the whole movie in a way. Like, actually, I really enjoyed the first 20 minutes of Ben just being super upset and hating his life. Because it actually felt like they were trying to do something like Nola, something authentic-ish. And then as soon as they step in the mansion, the music is a great example. It goes from like, and Chris, he's got range. He like, it was like really second line, like really marching band, like really authentic. And then super commercial, super low, super basic. And maybe the director had the same thing happen where the studio got in there and they were like, "It would be a shame if we basicified the whole movie."
Yeah.
Because I refuse to believe that like the end of this movie was the original idea. Like, I refuse to believe that a ghost battle in the cemetery was the original intention.
No fucking way.
And so like, you know, there's like one sequence where Rosario Dawson is trying to make breakfast.
Yeah.
Nice. And they're playing this kind of jazzy version of the Haunted Mansion music from the ride.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, and that's the part where I like kind of snap back in. I'm like, oh, this scene should be what the whole movie is.
Yeah.
Yes.
This whole movie should be like, they're trapped in this mansion. Ghosts are messing with them.
Casper-esque.
Yeah, Casper-esque. Yes. And they're trying to figure out their way out.
Yeah.
And if you want to still keep the same lesson of the movie, the like ending of it can be the kid befriends the Hatbox ghost and turns out he was just kind of like scared and alone the whole time.
Yeah.
There you go. There's your ending.
There's your fucking
You don't
ending.
Have to have a battle.
You just fixed the movie, Jeff.
I fixed the movie. Right?
You fixed the movie.
But like that scene where like she's trying to make eggs, I think that's funny.
I think it's funny too.
It's funny. Like they're pumping the whole thing of garlic and herbs into the, like, it's good. It's a good joke.
It's a good bit. Yeah. I like it too.
But you know, we're kind of at the beginning of the movie. I think we should like quickly summarize through some of this.
Sure.
And not a lot happens. Well, this movie is deceptively long for how little happens in it.
Yeah. Yes. And that killed me just how long this fucking movie is. I told Angelica, my girlfriend who was watching this with me, that they did the, I hope this isn't too like terrible to say, they did the dead white wife trope, the dead white wife trope, but for a black couple.
Mm-hmm.
Just doing the exact same thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh, my wife is dead. Oh. And like, minus the scene of her like under the covers, like waving into the camera.
Yeah.
It's like the exact same like little bit because like at the beginning of the movie, he's at a bar and he meets this woman. And oh, I should say character's name again.
Ben.
Ben, played by Lakeith Stanfield.
One of... Lakeith is, I think, one of those guys who's on track to be one of the greats of his generation.
Yeah.
I think Lakeith is an incredible actor.
I hear he's great in Sorry to Bother You.
He's incredible in Sorry to Bother You. He was, of course, great in Atlanta.
Judas and the Black
Messiah. He got an Academy Award nomination for Best Supporting Actor in spite of being the lead of the movie.
Oh my gosh.
And he just tweeted out, like, guys, I don't even know. I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah.
But he's one of those guys who's just been like, he's been consistently working.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's in Get Out, was kind of like his calling card movie. Pops up in Uncut Gems, Knives Out, Judas and the Black Messiah. Right. He's just consistently working, and then Atlanta, obviously, throughout the whole thing, which he's incredible on.
Yeah.
And then this is like his first big like studio leading role movie.
Interesting.
For like a
For
like something that isn't kind of niche.
Yeah. That's interesting.
And it sucks that it's this movie.
It does suck that it's this movie.
I do mostly think he's like pretty funny in it.
Uh-huh.
I think his energy is right for what this movie should be. But like, it never lets him like really excel.
Yeah, it's like I said, they got that one scene where he's like talking about his wife dying. Yeah. That feels misplaced in the movie.
Yes,
like it's almost like he's going too hard in the paint for what the movie is kind of calling for. Mm-hmm. Which to me, it's like I want to applaud him for how great he's doing, but it's like.
I mean, he has to deliver the Baskin Robbins.
And I'm like, wrong fucking movie, bro.
He has to say, my wife died at a Baskin Robbins. I don't know how you do that.
My wife died at a Baskin Robbins parking lot.
You know what movie does Baskin Robbins product placement well?
What?
Ant-Man.
Ant-Man?
The first Ant-Man.
Oh, yeah.
When Paul Rudd's working at Baskin Robbins at the beginning and they pull him in back and they're like, and he's like, I'm getting fired. And they're like, we found out about your record. And he's like, I didn't think you guys would find out. And he says, Baskin Robbins always finds out. That's funny. Really,
That's good.
Funny. Like, I'm still not, I still don't love that, like, they should have used some, like, fake ass brand name, like, I don't know, Ice Cream Pookie or something.
But it's very clear, like, he's working on a ghost camera.
Yes. Mm-hmm. He's an astrophysicist. For some reason.
For reasons.
Right. It doesn't seem like an astrophysicist is quite the guy who'd be looking for ghosts. But.
Well, he's not looking for ghosts. He's making a camera to look for like distant stars. But I guess it can also
take pictures of
take
ghosts.
Pictures of ghosts.
It's conveniently, yeah. It's
EV Here, camera.
Here's a clean... Here's how you fix this. He's a guy who's looking for a camera to take pictures of ghosts.
Because he has a...
You just say that.
Because he has a dead wife.
You say at the beginning, like, he meets his wife, and he's like, yeah, I'm taking pictures of the paranormal.
Because she's into the paranormal.
Yeah, she's into the paranormal, and that's why they meet. And then she dies, and he keeps working on the camera to try and get a picture of her.
Yeah.
To her know that she's still out there.
Exactly.
That's what the movie is ostensibly doing.
And the conflict
it's just
is
overcomplicated.
That he can't make this camera
Yeah.
until he can.
Yes.
But he makes the camera in the first act of the movie.
Yeah. He takes over her supernatural tour when he suddenly meets up with Father Kent, mm-hmm. played by Owen Wilson.
Who is...
Don't say it. Say it.
The worst casting of this movie.
I like Owen Wilson in this movie.
Does not belong in this movie.
I like
movie.
Owen Wilson in this movie.
I don't know. I just, every time...
Dear God, give us a break.
Every time it like cut to Owen Wilson in this movie, I'm like, I don't know. Like, because Danny DeVito was fine. Danny DeVito was great.
He was great.
Yeah. But Owen Wilson, I was just like, I'm a man of God.
Well, that's, I mean, that's the joke, is he's a fraud.
Well, yeah, but...
The thing I like is, we'll talk about this next week with our Beetlejuice episode. But this movie does a very similar bit to that, where like there's this priest in this movie.
Yeah,
it is so obvious from the beginning that he is a fake priest.
Right,
and yeah. The movie waits so long for the payoff of that, and I like that.
Mm.
I think that's a great joke to just keep stringing you along of like, is this guy actually a priest? Because he doesn't really seem like a priest.
It just felt so weird to have like Lakeith, Rosario Dawson, and like all these other casts, and they would whip pan left, and there's fucking Owen Wilson.
Yeah, wow.
He's just like, hi, everybody. Like,
I thought it was funny. Like, I guess maybe if the movie, if you rewrote it and made it more, it made it better, maybe, yeah, take him out. But for what the movie was, it was actually kind of like a nice refreshment. He's like, well, there are a lot of bad people. Go haunt them. I thought that was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's really funny because it's so obvious. That, and I'm just like waiting the whole movie. I'm like, he's not a priest. Someone needs to call him out on this.
Yeah.
You know what I found frustrating though, Jeff? Is that, you know what? They made a big deal about him not wanting to go in the house because he's like, I'm a fraud.
Yeah.
And then Ben was like, oh my God, really? And I'm like, what do you mean? Oh my God.
What do you
God,
mean
really?
You did?
How could you not know? Like, you're a smart guy.
The joke should be that he's like, I'm a fraud. And Ben should be like, I know. We all know.
That's what I was hoping for.
That should be like, that's a great payoff to that joke is like, this whole time, like, they're never telling the audience that everyone knows he's a fraud. You're just like, someone called him fraud at the end that you like reveal that, oh, they've all known all along.
Exactly.
Easy
and
fix.
That's what I was expecting to happen. It was really frustrating to me that they were shocked. I'm like, are you serious? Like, now I want you guys to die. Like, get lost.
This
now.
Is like the most obvious fake priest. He's like, yeah, you know, I would just like go around and, you know, make some extra dollars doing exorcisms. But he hires Ben to come to Gracie Manor, which is a mansion on the outskirts of New Orleans, where Rosario Dawson and her son have moved in. Her son, what's the kid's name? God, what is this kid's
Travis
name? Travis. Travis, played by Chase Dillon, who I think is pretty funny in this. Like the beginning when the two of them move into the house and she's like, I'm gonna light a candle and it's gonna change everything, and he just goes, right. Will it though?
I know.
Like, he's really funny. He has this face of pure fear. He's like, will it though? Like, will the candle change everything?
Only if it's the Yankee Doodle Amazon.
Yeah, the Yankee candle called? From Amazon. The vanilla candle.
Oh my God.
But Ben and Father Kent go to the house, the titular haunted mansion, where Rosario Dawson is just like, you don't have to come in if you don't want to. And Ben's like, I'll come in if you're paying me.
Right.
And she's like, but you don't have to. Which I do frankly think she should be like, if you come in, you will be cursed for life. Like, she should make...
So you're team Ben. You're team Ben on this.
Yeah, like, at minimum, she should lead with that. Because the two of them go in, and Ben goes around, he takes pictures, or he pretends to take pictures. He goes, chick, chick. It's very obvious. You expect Rosario Dawson to be like, you're just making noises with your mouth, but she never does. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, no ghosts in here, sorry. And he pockets the money and runs back to his house.
Mm-hmm.
We're back at home. He finds himself haunted by the ghost of a mariner, which is like... an old salty sea captain followed him home and is like hanging out in his bathtub.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah,
your professional opinion.
Yes.
So, you know what, something I didn't find clear was that like, you know, for example, like he'd hit that whole tidal wave that broke his, yeah, like destroyed his whole house, and the water carried him to the street. So clearly, like, I'm like, is this affecting the real world? Because it,
that's
then at the end of the movie, his house is fine.
Yeah,
it didn't look any different. So I'm like, I, huh?
Like, you can't tell if it's like, yeah, fake or real. Right. Like, I like the idea here because at the end of the Haunted Mansion ride, you like, it turns you towards a mirror and they're like, a ghost will follow you home. And you see various, mm-hmm, ghosts like on your cart with you. It's very fun.
It's just cool. Yeah.
I don't think you need that this early in the movie. That should be like an end of movie joke where like they finally leave the Haunted Mansion and they are in their car and they look in the rearview mirror and there's a ghost in the backseat.
Yeah.
Good payoff to that, right?
Yeah,
would be.
Stuart, we're talking about they're taking, you know, haunted pictures, and he was followed home by a mariner.
Yeah,
which is, I think, funny.
Yeah, I wish we spent more time with this mariner ghost.
I like him. He seems like a cool guy. Because
I do kind of like him, but we don't spend that much time with him.
Yeah,
and like the payoff of him like being returned to the ocean is like, I don't know,
mm-hmm,
could have been a lot more.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But, like, how did he end up in that mansion? That's my big ultimate question, right, in this whole movie when we come to the 999 happy souls. Is
happy haunts.
Happy haunts. We're meant to believe that the main antagonist of this movie, that the hat bag man, right?
The hat box ghost.
Hat box ghost. Mm-hmm. Voiced by Jared Leto, by the way.
Yes.
Notoriously fine.
We will talk about
it. Notoriously fine.
We will talk about it.
Notoriously fine actor.
We will talk about it.
No issues with him whatsoever. But he's supposed to be like this Victorian age villain,
mm-hmm,
but they have like people from 15th century China ghost,
yeah,
in the house. And I'm like, wait a minute. I'm a little confused. Like, he didn't time travel and collect all these souls. So if we're to be period accurate, they should only have souls from like when he lived in that house and onward, which like he said, and what did he say? Like, 60 people have died since
66, no?
66 people died since the Madame Leota, Jamie, yeah, Lee Curtis was there, which means there's 999 souls. Is a 999th soul that had died just like fucking dude from 2010, tax collector who came to, what? Like, and he, yeah, fucking zooted or something? Like, I don't
they
know.
They say that like the mansion was just kind of discovered there.
That the mansions traveled through time.
Well, that's just like, ooh, everybody who lives at the house dies. And that's like a joke from the ride. Mm-hmm. It's like a very morbid ride for Disney World. You walk through a graveyard to get onto it, and there's all these tombstones with like funny stories about how they died.
It's, I've like, never been on the ride. So
rest in peace, Cousin Ed, a great big rock fell on his head.
Mm.
And like, that's what all the tombstones say. They say stuff like that.
Yeah.
Funny death. And it's just like a bunch of people moved into this house and they all died.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it's supposed to be ridiculous that there's like, you know, Chinese, 15th century, Vikings.
Okay.
Just like all these different people have come to this house and died.
Got it. Okay. So I'm not clued in on the joke with the, yeah, ride.
Very in on the joke that just like, it's not supposed to make sense how these ghosts got here.
Yeah. Okay.
This is just a place where ghosts hang out.
Yeah.
But eventually, he's haunted by this mariner. He shows back up at the house and they're like, yeah, the ghosts follow you home.
Whoopsies.
Cleaner way to start this movie.
Yeah.
He is hired along with the scientist, the medium, and the priest, and they all come in at the same time. And we don't do the ghost follow you home. They just get trapped in the mansion immediately.
It all takes place in like one night kind of a thing?
No, like when he shows up at this point, mm-hmm, instead of having to go home, be haunted by the mariner, come back. When he shows up at the house for the first time, Danny DeVito, Tiffany Haddish, Owen Wilson are all there. And Rosario Dawson is just like, I brought you all here to help me figure out what's going on with this house.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're all at the house. We cut like 20 minutes out of the movie.
But like, what do you do when it's like the whole concept of like, they're too scared to do anything about it, so they want to leave?
They can't get out.
Why?
The ghost locked the door.
Okay.
Truly, like, the house is haunted and the door is unopenable.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Heard.
That is such a simple solution to the problem.
Yeah.
I think.
Got it.
Okay, instead of all this like business where like they can't leave the house for a prolonged period of time because the, yes, ghosts go with them.
I guess it makes sense that like the MacGuffin is not in the mansion, that they, yes, need to kill the bad guy.
Yeah. So just put the MacGuffin
in the mansion.
Doesn't that seem easier?
Makes sense too.
This movie's structured like a board game. So just let it be structured like a board game. They're looking for the thing, yeah, in the mansion.
Let
it's
it
Clue.
Be like Betrayal at House
it's
on the Hill.
It's Betrayal at House on the Hill. Yes. It's Clue. Oh yeah. My God. Like, it's so frustrating to me how easily fixable this shit is.
Yeah.
And by cutting all that out, the movie is now like 90 minutes long.
Yeah.
And we're all in the house.
I can't even fathom Disney execs being like, oh, this is 2 hours long. We're fine with that.
Like, what are we doing?
Who greenlit that? Runtime.
Movie runtimes are out of control, I think, for movies like this. I am not a... Yes. I will happily go see a 3.5 hour long movie if there's like artistic point behind it. For like kind of corporate slop, like it's like 90 minutes, please. 90 minutes. Maybe 2 hours if it's good, right?
Yeah.
And so I find that deeply frustrating. How do we feel about the rest of this cast? I'm just gonna skip ahead to when they all get to the mansion.
Fine.
Because all the shit outside the mansion is so irrelevant, except for Danny DeVito being extremely funny when he finds them. He's like, in his little car.
I think it's fine.
Like, Rosario Dawson may be like the best actress to have the worst filmography of all time.
Yeah.
She is, I think, very talented. I like her a lot. You look at her run of movies and it is dire.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, I'm scrolling through all of her movies right now and there's like a good one every 15 movies.
She works a lot.
She does work a lot.
Yeah.
But just like, she's playing Ahsoka now in Marvel or in Star Wars stuff, and it's like maybe the first like watchable thing she's been in a while. Nah, that's a little rude. I shouldn't say that. But she just has like a tough filmography. She has not been in that much good stuff, and I think she's very talented, which is frustrating. Because I think she's good in this movie. She's having fun.
Yeah.
I think Lakeith is great. It's just not given much. I think Owen Wilson's funny. I think Danny DeVito is actually fantastic. He's having a really good time just like yelling this stuff.
I would agree.
Tiffany Haddish, mostly funny. I like her a little bit. When she's just like, spirits on the wall! I don't know. You're kind of apathetic about all of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's all just, they're okay. It's all fine. I don't have any strong opinions about any particular person in the cast. Like I said, Owen Wilson was just a little bit like, all right, cool. Like, I don't think he really belongs in this cast of roles here. Danny DeVito is like the odd white dude. Like, that's, because we really want to get into it. It's like that, it kind of is like Owen Wilson's being, like, I don't know, he's the token white guy in a black cast, which is like, okay.
Yeah.
But then you also have Danny DeVito, who I think is doing a much better job at doing that.
Mm-hmm. I like all of their energies.
Yeah.
And I think the better movie would have them play off of it more.
Yeah.
Because like I said, this is like a board game movie. And you want like all of them kind of like, you know, bickering amongst themselves while they're trying to solve this puzzle of the Haunted Mansion.
But yeah, just none of it really like, there wasn't like a casting choice. Like as soon as I saw Jamie Lee Curtis and like the crystal ball, I was like, what the fuck? Like
Jamie Lee Curtis, maybe delivering a career worst performance in this movie.
Yes, I was gonna say, I think that was the only performance I genuinely took me out of it.
Jamie Lee Curtis, an actress who is very talented, is very good at her job. Maybe.
Yes.
Walking in. Like, I don't know what's going on here.
This gave me the vibes that they had Jamie for like 2 days at a blue screen.
She's like,
and that was it.
Half committing to the accent.
Exactly. Yes.
Like, if you want Madame Leota to talk like this or whatever the voice is, whatever accent she's trying to do. I don't even fucking know what accent she's trying to do.
I don't know. But it's giving that she like, you know, was in a green screen room for 2 days and that was her. Yeah. They paid her millions of dollars to do that.
You know, we don't need Madame Leota coming out of the ball at the end.
No, we don't.
Just leave her in the just leave her
she
in the ball.
She should have stayed in that fucking ball.
Get back, Jamie, get back in the ball. Like Jamie, they should just bring her onto a green screen stage, put a camera at her head, have her say like, spirits beyond and stuff like that. I don't know. And then put her in the ball, send her home, have a good weekend.
That's it.
I feel like in the Eddie Murphy one, whoever plays Madame Leota is in the ball the whole time.
Yeah, I think so too.
Who does play Madame Leota in that one? Is it someone of note?
Well, I don't think they carry the same storyline in the Eddie Murphy.
But it does have Madame Leota. It's Jennifer Tilly. Okay.
Jennifer Tilly.
And the thing is like
Madame Leota in The Ride.
She is.
Who plays her in The Ride?
Some person who Walt Disney probably met on the street. No, it's probably some anti-union buster from Walt Disney's like Hunter Club or something. I don't know.
That's funny.
So they're all in the house. They can't leave because they get followed home. They find like a hidden room and they talk to Madame Leota, who tells them that they're being haunted by the Hatbox Ghost. How do we feel about the Hatbox Ghost? What's the vibe?
Who fucking cares?
You know what's funny about the Hatbox Ghost? Is he's like an animatronic they made for the ride and then like never installed. Until after this movie came out.
No shit.
It's been like 60 years they've had this like design for the Hatbox Ghost and they just never put it in.
Whoa.
And it just became like a subject of fascination for Disney park fans. And then, you know, in this movie, they decide like the Hatbox Ghost will be the villain. They're like, fuck, we got to put him in the ride. You got to giddy up.
I fucking love Disney conspiracies.
Mm-hmm.
It is like my favorite thing to watch on YouTube are like these wigging out nerds that go deep into the Disney tunnels and the vaults and Club 23 and all the fucking. I love it.
Yeah.
I am here for it.
Yeah.
Do I think any of it's true?
None of these conspiracies are true, but there is so much deep lore to Disney that's crazy.
Did you know there's tunnels underneath the park?
Disney World is a...
What's Disney hiding in the tunnels, Jeff?
Well, I actually can tell you, I've been in one of the tunnels, but...
What? Really?
Very briefly.
Wait a minute.
What? Very briefly. But no, the thing is like... the thing about Disney...
Like, I know they're just service tunnels. No,
Disneyland does not have tunnels.
Oh.
Disneyland is entirely flat. They learn from their mistake. Because if you want to get something from one side of the park to the other, you have to walk it through the park. Mm-hmm. Or you can walk it around.
Yeah.
But, like, if Captain Hook has to appear in Fantasyland, and Cass' staging is at the front of the park, he's going to walk his ass all the way through the park. Mm-hmm. Captain Hook just has to walk all the way over there. They realize their mistake.
Yeah.
Disney World, when they constructed the Magic Kingdom, they built the tunnel system, covered it in dirt, and then built the park on top of it. So it's a second story. And it's a very gradual incline getting from the front of the park to the castle, where everything is now a second story. So at the beginning of the day, when you have energy, you're walking uphill. And at the end of the day, you're walking downhill, but you don't notice because it's so gradual.
This is really cool.
That's the design element of Magic Kingdom.
You one of them?
I am one of them.
One of the tunnel people?
I'm one of the mole people.
One of the tunnel people from Disney.
But like
Disney
now if like Captain Hook has to get there, they can walk entirely through the tunnels, which have like rapid transit systems. Yeah. You can get equipment around faster, and you can do service underneath the rides.
I love the conspiracies about what goes on in those tunnels underneath Disney.
What mostly happens in those tunnels is Cinderella takes a cigarette break. Like mostly what happens in those tunnels.
And it's great. And I love it. I love people wigging out over this shit.
Yeah. But, like, there is, like, a lot, like, the design elements and the infrastructure of Disney parks is so crazy.
Abandoned by Disney.
Yeah. Like, I think the infrastructure of those parks is so fascinating and fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm mostly into. It's just, like, how do you design shit like this?
Yeah. True story, did you hear about the kids that swam out to Tom Sawyer's Island and died?
No, they swam out to...
Huckleberry Finn's Island, some island that was in a
Tom Sawyer's Island is there, but that's not a thing where like you can they died on I think it's Paradise Island,
no I'm
Discovery Island.
Discovery Island, maybe that's what
it's like the little island in the middle of Bay Lake.
Yes, and I think what happened was when they tried to swim back, it was like something about like they have like wave pools or they have simulated like waves or something that made it so the kids who were swimming couldn't get back. So like, and then one of the boys drowned.
You're right. It was Tom Sawyer Island in Disneyland. Closing time.
But what?
I'm thinking of Discovery Island.
I'm trying to think of what was the thing that made them drown. Because you got to think it's like, why do you, what fucking wussy ass kids like we can't swim? But no, there actually was a thing.
The younger brother just didn't know how to swim, and so the older brother carried him, and then he got exhausted and drowned.
Oh, did the little younger brother drown too? Then?
No, he made it.
Oh.
Oh, wow.
So he didn't need to crawl on his back anyway.
Yeah.
He's traumatized for life now.
But I thought there was something in the water that also made it harder to swim.
I mean, I'm sure. I mean, there's like a little current they simulate. But
I think that's what it is. They simulate a current.
But
right, because there's a boat ride that goes through it, right?
But no, there's like what I was thinking of is that in, you know, next to the Magic Kingdom, there's like a big lake called Bay Lake.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an island in the middle of it that used to be like a zoo kind of called Discovery Island.
Mm-hmm.
And like Disney has active security boats patrolling it because it's all still there. And like people have swam out there and like gotten attacked by alligators trying to swim
Shit,
out there.
Yeah, really.
And so like they're all actively trying to discourage people from trying to get there.
What's on there?
It's just like an abandoned zoo.
Oh,
it's all that's there.
That's cool.
It's not worth it for them to tailor it all down, so they just left it there.
Right, but now people are so interested.
People are like, they want to go urban exploring on Discovery Island, and they get attacked by gators.
Who wouldn't? Who wouldn't though?
Yeah, it'd be cool though. Right?
It would be really cool.
But like more fun, like things are like, we'll get back to this movie quickly.
Yeah.
But like the castle is designed, it gets progressively smaller as it gets higher up to make it look bigger than it is.
Yeah.
It's actually only like 4 stories tall, basically.
Yeah.
Same with all the buildings. They're 2 stories, but they look like 3. Mm-hmm. There's just like really fun design stuff, including in the Haunted Mansion, which is a really well-designed ride.
Nice, nice work. Nice work. I'm going to shake your hand. That was a good segue.
Frequent guest of the show, Cole Bradley. Has said that the Haunted Mansion he thinks is one of the top 10 American artistic endeavors. Hmm. He thinks it's one of the like the best 10 pieces of art that an American like society has contributed to. Because it is so well designed to like tell a story and put you in that story.
Yeah.
And this movie just can never fucking stick the landing, and it frustrates me so goddamn much.
You know what this movie gives me the vibes of? It's like it's like the Star Wars ride or the Harry Potter ride, where it's like you're on like roller coaster seats, but the main ride is this TV screen in front of you. It's like the simulation stuff that they're doing now with all these new types of rides that still have like the drops and turns and all that stuff. But it's like really, it's like all these simulated effects through like this big TV screen.
Yeah, there are a few rides that do stuff like that.
That's what Haunted Mansion is giving. Because those rides can be very fun, but there's something about it that takes me out of it just a little bit of being like, I know this is all like a TV screen.
Yeah, there's not a level of authenticity to it.
And that's what this movie, Haunted Mansion 2023, feels like.
There's a
like.
Lack of authenticity.
Yeah.
In spite of it, like, almost getting there. The Hatbox Ghost is played by Jared Leto. We have to address. Notoriously normal guy, Jared Leto. Someone who definitely doesn't have a cult on an island.
That is wild. Is it Discovery Island?
It was Discovery Island. But no, Jared Leto, notoriously normal guy, who won an Oscar for playing a gay man in Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah.
Or trans character, right? Trans.
I don't remember.
And then was like, I'm going to be very selective about my next role.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think this is important. And then he announced he's playing the Joker in Suicide Squad.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, it's a very important, you know, I'm following up Heath Ledger. Very selective. And then after that, he just went fucking buck wild and just started doing any bullshit they threw at him.
Yeah.
He's in Blade Runner 2, Zack Snyder's Justice League, House of Gucci, Morbius. He's in this fucking movie.
It's Morbin time.
For some reason, Disney decided to get in bed with him because he's in Haunted Mansion and he's in the new Tron movie. Tron Ares, a movie I want to be good so badly because it would cure my sadness.
You want Tron Ares to be
I
really
want
good.
Tron 3 to be good so badly. You have no fucking idea, Stuart, how much my mental health is riding on Tron 3.
Why do you need Tron 3 to be good?
Because I like Tron and I like Tron 2 and I want Tron 3 to be good. Because it's such a fucking fight getting them to make a Tron movie.
Yeah.
Every like 20 years Disney tries to make a Tron movie, it flops and or it doesn't make that much money. They're like, maybe we tried. Maybe we'll come back to it. And then, like, they try it again. It didn't work. Like, only kind of works.
Yeah, right. Weird.
It's got a Nine Inch Nails soundtrack. I want Tron 3 to be good so bad. Anyway, but Jared Leto's in it. It's a big problem. anyway, he supposedly, according to the credits of this movie, he plays the Hatbox Ghost. But he would be.
Why did you say it like that?
You would be hard pressed to prove to me that Jared Leto plays the Hatbox
supposedly,
Ghost.
Supposedly, according to the IMDb.
Because you watch this movie. The only Jared Leto moment in this entire movie is he appears in some pictures. There are like some pictures like, this is Alistair Crump. Sorry. Alistair Crump. This is the scary name they've given the villain at this movie. Alistair Crump.
Stop.
Michael, what would you do if I told you Alistair Crump was coming for you? You'd probably laugh at me. You'd laugh in my face.
It makes me hungry. I don't know. Stop, I want to hear the name.
Like, doesn't he sound like a guy who'd run a bakery in the Bronx
exactly,
or something? Like,
exactly. Sounds like
you're Oh my God.
You got to go up to Crump's Bakery. It's at 22nd and Emerald.
We must stop.
So the only time we ever see Jared Leto's face is in these pictures of Alistair Crump.
Don't forget the police sketch, you know. Can't
forget
that.
Because whenever the Hatbox Ghost appears in the movie, it is a completely CG creation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jared Leto might be doing mocap. I do not know.
Probably
I can't,
not.
He might be. He seems like a guy who would insist upon doing mocap.
Yeah.
Okay. Especially after his Blade Runner thing where he actually blinded himself to play a blind man in that movie.
What?
Do you know about this?
What?
No.
And for Blade Runner 2049, Jared Leto wore blind contacts that he couldn't see on set because he was playing a blind guy who's led by like little robots.
Oh.
And so he put contacts in so he just couldn't see.
What a fucking dumbass.
Yeah,
you said he was a totally normal guy.
And so he
would,
and so like he's walking around the set. I did lie to you. He's walking on the set not having any fucking idea where he is.
He wanders onto a new set.
During Morbius, because he spends half the movie with crutches and he's a method actor, supposedly. He would refuse to like not use the crutches to get to the restroom. Or he'd have a PA push him in a wheelchair to the restroom so he could stay in character.
That's fucking... I just want...
He seems like the worst.
See, I want him to die.
But doesn't he seem like someone who would insist upon mocapping in this movie?
Probably, yeah.
And then the voice... It sounds your little thing you're doing. It sounds like...
It doesn't take a lot.
This is what the Hatbox Ghost sounds like. He sounds just like that.
Yeah, very much.
And I'm like...
It's just a voice changer.
Why did they pay Jared Leto? I would have done
it. Anybody could, yeah.
I would have done it for $20.
Yeah.
Pay me $20. I'll show up to the set of Haunted Mansion. I'll mocap the Hatbox Ghost and do the voice.
Yeah.
$20. That's it.
Yeah.
You paid Jared Leto probably $5 million to do this. That's why this movie costs so much fucking money.
And why it's 2 hours long?
Yes. So... We should get to the subject of this podcast.
Is this a subject?
I feel like we should quickly.
I think this is called Easy Riders.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Because eventually they go to Crump Manor.
Yeah.
They go to Crump Manor, which is a I shit you not, listener, home, a second haunted mansion.
Yes.
Several hours from the first haunted mansion. Because this movie just cannot fucking pick a lane. And they're like, we must go to the other haunted mansion.
There has to be two haunted mansions.
They go to the other haunted mansion. Two haunted mansion. They go to the other haunted mansion. Crump Manor. Located north of whatever the fuck this was. Gracie Manor.
Yes.
Crump Manor is designed after the Florida Haunted Mansion. That is the design of it.
Okay.
Funny.
I don't care.
Nice, cool. Love it. They go in, and which has now been turned into a bed and breakfast with like dinner theater. And they go in and they have to join a tour group.
Yeah.
To get in. The tour is being led by
Winona
Ryder.
Well, welcome to Crump Manor. There are no bathroom breaks. The tour is 3 hours long.
Stuart has basically done her entire performance in this
movie. What's that? Is that Kane, Alistair Crump's?
No, it's my cane, and I use it for personal purposes.
No. Deeply personal purposes.
Deeply personal purposes.
Like, what?
Like,
what is she doing with that cane?
I think it's a funny joke. Because I like how obtuse it is. Yeah. No matter how hard you think about it, you cannot fathom what she's using this cane for.
Oh, Christ.
Like, Winona basically has nothing. It's not. She has, like, a scene. It's a joke. It's a cameo.
Yeah.
She's being brought in because she is, like, an icon of, like, kind of creepy early work, like Beetlejuice and Edward Scissorhands and whatnot. That's, like, her... And Stranger Things. That's why she's in this movie.
Yeah.
It's just, like, a fun cameo.
Nostalgia thing.
It's a nostalgia thing.
Yeah.
She's in it for fun.
Yeah.
But the thing, like, that's so weird about, like, her appearance here... is that I think she's pretty
and
funny.
Dan Levy's appearance.
Yeah, too. And Dan Levy.
Oh yeah.
I think she's actually pretty fucking funny in the scene.
For what she has.
Yeah, like for her four lines of dialogue. Like I think she really sells I use the cane for deeply personal purposes.
You gotta do it the way she does like a little cough. It's like I do it for
deeply personal purposes.
Yeah. And then she's like walking around every time because they're trying to find like a piece of a thing that fucking Crump owned that they can use to exorcise him. And they're like, is this knife? No, it's a replica. And it's like a fun joke about like you go to all these tours and it turns out everything's fake and remade. Nothing's authentic. And like, it's like, why is it behind the glass cage if it's a replica?
What are we paying for?
Yeah.
If we're here.
Exactly.
But I think Winona has like a, it's like a fun scene for her.
Yeah.
And it's nice to like, it's nice to see her. Like in a movie where I'm like so frustrated for the whole thing, it's nice to just have her come in for a scene and like land a few jokes.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, mostly successful sequence.
Mostly successful.
Yeah.
And Dan Levy comes out and he also does like a similar like.
But he's like.
A good bit.
Oh my God. He is like.
He's doing a lot.
He's got a hot dog and he put some ketchup and some mustard and some mayo and he slapped some relish and he put a pickle in there and he put a second hot dog in. He charred it, slathered it in fucking Cheese Whiz.
All right. All right.
Too much.
I'll think it was
Winona
that.
Is like a nice, sensible, like, you know, little condiment on top.
Like what condiment?
Oh, yeah, she put some little relish, a little mustard. Okay. It's sensible.
Sensible.
Dan Levy's too much.
Too big, big hot dog.
Too much.
Too big hot dog.
Too much business for how small of a role. And then in the background, he's playing Small World on a piano.
Yeah.
He's like, Small World on
piano. Can you imagine? Because Disney just, they lost Steamboat Willie like to public domain.
Yes.
What's the next thing they're going to lose in what order?
It'll be a while.
It'll be a while?
Yeah, it'll be a good while.
Really?
Because Steamboat Willie is like, what, 27 or something?
Fuck. They really own
the
rights.
Yeah, it was 1928.
Like, they really own the rights for that long. How long has Disney been dead for?
A long time. Well, you know, Disney is the reason that the copyright law kept getting pushed is because they would just
lobby
the U.S. government.
Yeah.
They eventually just gave up on that. But like, Mickey Mouse, Steamboat Willie is 1928. And so, like, it's going to be a good while until...
When's the next thing?
I mean, it's going to be the other Disney cartoon characters like Goofy and Pluto and shit.
Minnie Mouse, Donald Duck, Goofy, Pluto, 2029. But it says hard maybe.
Yeah, hard maybe. You know? Yeah. Because, like, Snow White doesn't come out until 1937.
Yeah. Right.
So, and then they start making their their movies. So we have at least another decade before we get to, like... any of like the real stuff besides just, you know, Steamboat Willie.
Right.
And the thing we're quickly going to learn is like, yeah, these characters will go into public domain and nothing
then
will happen.
What? Yeah, then what?
They'll be in the public. Like, what is someone else going to do? Make another Mickey Mouse movie? You know who's going to go see it? No one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like the fucking Winnie the Pooh slasher movie.
Yeah.
Like sure.
That no one's really watching.
Yeah, no one, like.
Right.
Yeah, look, Disney, these things went into public domain. Look what happened.
Nothing.
Their real concern is that when the movies start going public domain, then like they can't sell like a Blu-ray anymore. But or it won't be exclusive to Disney Plus.
But that'll be in another 200
years. It's
going to
be in so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I hope that Haunted Mansion goes into public domain before I'm dead so that I can re-edit this movie into something good.
Good.
And release it on my own streaming service, Jeff Plus.
Jeff Plus.
I'm gonna make Jeff Plus one of these days.
You should.
And you guys will all get the link.
Wow.
Anyway, they find Crump's hat in this fucking manor. They go home and they try to exorcise him. Right?
Yeah.
That's what happens. Owen Wilson distracts all the ghosts while Danny DeVito gets possessed by the Hatbox Ghost. And he's just like, would you like my poison? This is a good scene. When Danny DeVito's like possessed by the ghost. And he's like, so obviously pouring poison in the glass. And he's like, drink up. And they're like, what is going on with you? He's like, I am the ghost.
Yeah.
Anyway, Tiffany Haddish like rides a ghost horse while the kid is convinced to surrender his soul to the Hatbox Ghost, right?
Yeah.
Lakeith follows them and has a standoff with the Hatbox Ghost in the middle of the cemetery while Tiffany Haddish summons Madame Leota and a bunch of ghosts, and they banish the Hatbox Ghost to hell.
Through the power of love and friendship, they defeat the Jared Leto.
They send the Hatbox Ghost into the eternal Disney void, which is the amount of Disney characters who fall into a pit because they don't want to show their actual death.
Right.
Yeah. He's already dead.
Well, what was that guy from Up who fell?
Carl Frederick? No, that's the main guy. I know he's voiced by Christopher Plummer, right?
Yeah, but he's in there. He's in that pit.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. All the people
Hades
is in there. All the guys that fall down the pit that they don't see.
Yeah. Scar. When the Scar gets killed by the hyenas.
True.
Yeah, he gets viciously ripped apart on camera.
It's true. In shadow.
No. On camera, you see like his intestinal organs get ripped out by the hyenas. I was surprised they allowed that at the cartoon.
Pretty tough.
You guys don't know about this? You should go back. You should go back and rewatch Lion King. Educate yourselves.
Okay. So they defeat the Hatbox Ghost. Jared Leto is sent to the underworld where he belongs.
Morbius time.
It's Morbin time. I can't wait for Kraven the Hunter to come out and make $1. It's going to be great.
I saw a commercial for that, and I thought, I forgot this was a movie.
Yeah.
But did they push it back?
They did.
That's why.
I like the look of Russell Crowe in that movie as like some sort of Russian gangster. And he's like, I am going to fight Kraven the Hunter. It seems good to me. That movie's going to make $1. Anyway,
that'll be you, right?
That'll be me.
Yeah.
It'll be me going opening weekend. Kraven the Hunter. You know, if Kraven the Hunter had Alistair Crump, I think it would be good.
Shut True. The fuck up. Are we not talking about this movie? I hate it. It's so bad.
Stuart is so angry.
I'm very pissed. Okay. Sorry, Michael.
They have escaped the Haunted Mansion.
You have a Let's Rage shirt for the viewers and listeners.
Stuart is like wearing a shirt that says
Let's Rage.
Very
appropriate. Yeah.
Let's Rage. We're playing D&D tonight. Thought it'd be appropriate.
Very nice. But Lakeith goes home to his house.
Yeah.
And he finds a cat on the door that's been hanging at his house the whole time.
Right, here we go.
And he checks the name tag of the hat, and it's Tater Tot.
Because his wife was on her way to go buy some Tater Tots when she died. Yeah.
But let me quickly... You know, everybody knows my favorite thing is Wikipedia editors. I would simply like to say... On the Wikipedia synopsis for this movie, it says, Ben continues to move on with his life and discovers the cat staying by his door is named Tater Tot, a nod to his wife's love for the food. They have hyperlinked the food, and it leads to the Wikipedia page for Tater Tots. In case you didn't fucking know what a Tater Tot was, you could thank you to the editors of the Haunted Mansion Wikipedia page. You're the fucking real ones out there.
That's fantastic.
They all eventually reunite at the mansion for a Halloween party. We find out what happened to them all. It turns out Owen Wilson has actually become a priest. But they're all very successful now. They all hang out at the mansion. And it turns out all the ghosts stay at the mansion in harmony with the living. And there's like this really weird fucking shot where... CG zooms out of the house and all the ghosts are standing on the veranda of the house.
Yeah, and there's a dance scene, end credits
dance scene.
Which should have been the energy of the whole movie.
Yeah.
In my opinion.
This movie should be so much funner than it is.
Yeah.
This movie does not need to be an epic battle of good versus evil. It's the fucking Haunted Mansion.
It's just
go ride the ride, you dumbass.
It's just called Haunted
Mansion. Dumb.
Yeah. Dumb.
Michael, tell us more about your thoughts about this movie.
You know, I will. I think, you know, the part that actually, there's one part I actually really liked when Travis, I forget exactly what he says, but he's like, no, I know this feeling. It's like they're running
from something.
And I was like, wait, that's kind of cool. I was like, all right. And I was kind of hoping,
there'd be more to it than just Jared Leto.
Yeah, but it just. I think the Whiplash was my biggest problem. It's just like you said, like too much and too long. Somehow too much, but also too long. But also not enough at the same time. Like, I think leaving the mansion so much kind of takes me out of it too. I understand that their ghosts are following them and that's scary, but I don't know. Jeff, you kind of touched on this, but I really wish they would just lock the door, make the door disappear, their ghosts. And that'd be it. That'd be much scarier. And then they're stuck in there making eggs, and they're like, oh my God, we're going to starve to death. We got to figure this out. But just constantly going in and out. The stakes felt really low. I'm like, all right. So he splashes water at you. Whatever.
Yeah. good joke early in the movie is that Travis, the kid, keeps getting bullied by kids at school, and they're chasing him home. And at one point, like, Keith looks out the window, and the kid is running down, like, this extremely long walkway with weeping willows along it from the road, pursued by bullies who are seemingly running, chasing him to the haunted mansion. That's the one good joke. So this movie comes out. It very bizarre times. It releases in the middle of the SAG-AFTRA strike last year.
Right.
Or a few days after the SAG-AFTRA strike starts. As a result, none of the cast can walk the red carpet. Disney instead sends a bunch of costumed characters to walk the red carpet. Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse, Maleficent, Cruella de Vil, the Evil Queen, all walk the red carpet for this movie.
Fucking, what do you call them? Stags or whatever.
What?
What do you call the people that cross the picket line?
Oh, people who cross the picket line.
What do you call them?
I know what you mean.
It's not stags. Whatever the fuck you call it. Stags? What do you call it?
Like, I know what you mean, and I can't. Scab!
Scab!
Scab.
All those fucking scabs.
Mickey Mouse is a notorious scab.
All those fucking Disney scabs.
What if you just went up to Mickey Mouse? You're like, you're a fucking scab to him in a theme park. He's like, oh, gosh.
That's Goofy.
Mickey says Garsh too.
No, I was complimenting you. That was Goofy.
Garsh, yuck.
I wasn't talking about... Fuck. Talking about the characters.
Oh, I haven't seen this.
Hey, Stuart. Yuck.
This is so good. The premiere pictures. I haven't seen this before. It's kind of unsettling.
It's like Disneyland, upsetting,
they're
right?
At the park? They're at the ride, right?
Yeah, they had the premiere at the ride. It's really unsettling.
That's good.
I don't like it.
That's good.
But this movie comes out. It releases in 3,700 screens. It opens with like $24 million behind Barbie and Oppenheimer. Massive flop.
Nice.
It's like the third weekend of those movies too. Yeah. So it's like really behind. It makes $170 million on a $150 million budget.
Fuck.
And loses Disney $117 million.
Right.
That is how much they lost on this movie.
Good.
If you were to... The thing is, if they had made this movie shorter, more cost efficient, smarter, could have been made for like $40 million.
Yeah.
And you could have still made a profit on a lukewarm gain.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say.
Sorry, say it again. How much did this movie cost?
$150 million.
Fuck. That's before marketing and everything.
Yeah, it's before marketing.
That's absurd.
That's an absurd amount of money. That is ridiculous.
For how much they pay to make these superhero movies and Marvel, it's like, that's fucking insane to do $150 million for a Haunted Mansion movie. That makes me think that the director was definitely out of his depth.
Working on
a budget that fucking big, you can't tell me there weren't hands in the pie.
I think there must have been some hands in the pie.
Yeah, absolutely.
This movie, the original Haunted Mansion with Eddie Murphy, cost $90 million. It made $182 million.
See, there you go. Eddie Murphy's better. Yeah.
So, it still didn't make that much money, but, it made over its budget.
I'm a somewhat defender of that Eddie Murphy Haunted Mansion movie. I got to rewatch it, but maybe it's not as good. Anyway, but I remember it being, okay at best.
The point being, this movie, huge flop. Bad for Disney. Bad for everyone involved. They'll never make another one.
Yeah.
And it's so frustrating to me, as you can see how it could have been good.
Yeah.
For Winona, she's just a cameo in it. It really contributes nothing to her career.
Yeah, but it contributes an hour and a half to our podcast.
It does.
Yeah. Yes.
And we're getting close to the end here, Jeff.
We are.
Next week, we're talking about Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice. Michael, is there anything else you'd like to say? Because I think we're getting near the end here. Anything else about Haunted Mansion?
About Beetlejuice. Haunted Mansion. You know what? I don't know what else there is to say. We've covered pretty much... nothing, but that's what the movie was, so.
Nothing.
I just wish it could have been... Well, no, it could have... What's frustrating is it could have been better, and that's what gets me. We did Strays for $46 million, mm-hmm. and I had more A-listers and way more VFX and everything, and it was just... It flopped, but it didn't flop that bad because it was
made for a reasonable budget.
Which is still a ton of money. I just can't comprehend how it was so expensive for that.
To make Haunted Fucking Mansion.
I can't wrap my head around
fucking
it.
Mansion.
I guess if you don't work in film and TV, you're like, whatever, that's a lot of money. But just like, there's so much better made for so much less is what kills me, you know?
Yeah. Consistently.
Consistently, yeah. It's fine. Haunted Mansion. Okay, here's my question to you guys. What's the next Haunted Mansion going to be called? So we have the Haunted Mansion and
Haunt.
Mansion.
It'll just be called Haunt.
Do you know what? I actually think I just had this thought that like there could be a really good like betrayal at House on the Hill,
mm-hmm.
like board game to movie adaptation. But they already made one. It's called Cabin in the Woods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All that we need. Disney, I'm talking to you right now. Bob Iger. Call me up. I will make you a really good Spacebound movie. You gotta trust me.
The story is, you know, they'll cast Chris. It says space and mountain. You know what that tells me? Chris Pratt's the number one.
Oh my God.
No. Let me. I can make you a really good Space Mountain movie.
That doesn't involve
that ride
Chris
has
Pratt.
Such good vibes to it. The movie writes itself. You're just making Alien.
Yeah. Jeff, have you been? Alien.
You're just making
been
Alien.
On Space Mountain at Disneyland recently?
Yeah, it's such a great vibe.
When's the last time you rode the ride at Disneyland?
I rode in Florida like 2 years ago, I think.
Because I have bad news for you. I think
they fuck it up.
So for like the Star Wars.
They made it Hyperspace Mountain, right?
They did, but they haven't, like, at least the times I've been there, and someone could fact check us, but like it has not changed. Like, it's still Hyperspace Mountain. I think they might have just like permanently kept that.
It's annoying.
And when I go up the ride, it still has like the Star Wars little scrolling text. Which is fine, but I actually don't like it. Just leave it how it was.
It says that it's transformed back into Space Mountain on their website.
Okay.
This could
That's
be a
good.
Win for
I
us.
Don't know. I went in like August or something, and it's for some reason Hyperspace. I'm like, this is not Star Wars time right now.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then I leave it to you. I feel like you would make a great Space Mountain movie.
Oh, wait. I forgot there was a third Haunted Mansion movie. It's called The Muppets Haunted Mansion. It came out in 2021.
Right. Yeah.
I haven't watched it. Maybe I'll watch it one day. Anyway. Michael, I think we're getting near the end, so I wanted to thank you so much for coming on this episode.
Yeah, man. I wish we had happier things to talk about, but I felt therapeutic. I felt this was therapeutic.
Yeah, we were getting some stuff out.
Yeah, I got some deeply repressed feelings. Deeply personal.
Some deeply repressed feelings.
Thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for coming on. You've been such a good friend. You've been composer of the show for so long, delivering incredible work to us that people get to listen to every day. So it's nice to have you on
that
the show.
That we really do not deserve. We really don't deserve your level of work on this level of a podcast.
Michael composes like real stuff.
Yeah.
He's like a real guy working in LA, and he finds the time to work on our silly little show. Which
it's
is
a
always
real
appreciated.
Show. Give yourself more credit. You got sound effects now.
We do have sound effects.
I can't hear, but they
Michael can't hear them. But
yeah, no, this ones. Is great. Keep going. What's the? No, never mind. I was gonna ask what's the next one, but I can't.
I'll tell you after we cut.
We'll tell you off, Mike. All right, take us home, sweetie.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. Make sure to tune next week to our episode on Beetlejuice, which we will be only calling Beetlejuice during the episode. As a reminder, please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. As a reminder, we're available on Spotify, Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube. Pop into our Reddit, r/Travolting. We are on Blue Sky and Instagram at Travolting Pod. Special thanks, as always, to Becca for the graphic design and Michael Van Bodegem Smith for the theme music that's now taking you out. Have a great rest of your week, folks, and see you next time for Beetlejuice.